Welcome to DAD, Dads Aren't Deadbeats, a community of care and compassion in observance of the Golden Rule. Come and join us and contribute to riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency.
It's Monday.
It's both Elmo's birthday and National Carrot Cake Day. This episode is brought to you by self-care. Self-care, because you can't look out for others if you cannot appreciate your personal value.
And you are very welcome to the DAD podcast. So, Elmo's birthday and carrot cake day, Matt, can you please explain?
Not really, but apparently today is Elmo's birthday. And Elmo, of course, is the only being to present himself in front of Congress as a non-human witness. So, interesting fact for the day there.
Exactly. I can't remember Elmo. I never watched Sesame Street a day in my life.
Elmo was on Sesame Street.
I think it was, wasn't
was he?
I think so. No idea. I'm not sure. They say never begin with an apology, but we're going to anyway. Last week, we visited a town in the East Midlands to interview a parent who has a fascinating story to tell and has gone through the legal process. Our thanks go out to Sarah, that's not her real name, but that's what we'll go with for now, for taking the time to participate in the podcast.
It was a really interesting discussion, right, Lee?
Absolutely. We spent over an hour talking, sharing experiences and gathering content for the pod. However, there will need to be a range of editing done on the pod before it's available for public consumption. We will be anonymising Sarah by modulating her voice. We are in the process of doing this now and we will have this out to you very, very soon.
You're in for a treat, folks. This will be a highly emotive discussion and we're planning on adding commentary to contextualise the pod.
Indeed. So what's on the agenda in the shed this evening, dude?
Well, today we are going to be discussing self-care post-separation. Now, the Benenden Health Foundation described divorce as the fifth most stressful life event. And so this episode, which is directed at both men and women, with some aspects directed specifically towards men, hopes to provide support at what is undoubtedly a tumultuous time. So, as we all know, our lovely host has some experience of this. So Lee, what specifically are we going to be examining today?
Well, today, Matt, we're going to be focusing on topics and take turns in talking through each and every one of them. I think the plan is to share our research and then comment on the findings. So this one should be quite conversational.
Indeed. So do you want to kick us off? I think you're going to be talking about recognising the emotional impact of separation to begin with.
Absolutely, Matt. So at the beginning of separation, emotions are running at an extreme high. You know, your brain is in a constant state of overtime. You're thinking one thing, then you're thinking another thing. Your brain is just constantly on the go, Matt. And something's got to give. It can't keep happening like that. But, you know, you'll be fine one minute and a complete wreck the next. There's so many emotions all at once, and it can be very, very overwhelming. You know, you'd be sad, angry, exhausted, frustrated, confused. And a lot of the time, you'd be very anxious about the future because it's not the future that you planned. You're all of a sudden in unknown territory. And honestly, Matt, it's terrifying. For the everyday person, something new can be terrifying.
Yeah, and I've had several friends who've gone through this and they've likened the feelings they have to those described by Swiss-American psychologist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross as the stages of grief. Would you agree with that?
I would, Matt, I would. I think stages, the five stages of grief,
there are,
I believe.
Five, indeed, yeah.
It is. Having a big breakup is like having someone just being ripped out of your life, mm-hmm. isn't it? It's traumatic. Mm, it is traumatic.
No, absolutely. It's the number of friends I've had who've gone through divorce have frequently told me that it's a lot worse even than losing people that are very close to them, because it's something that they imagined their life would be stable with and then all of a sudden wasn't.
Well, that's why you get married, isn't it, Matt? You think that's the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, and mm-hmm. you know, by all means it should be. Mm, but absolutely. things don't always go as planned.
No.
But I'd like to talk about being in a support network.
Okay.
Now, honestly, I believe a support network is vital, and I mean vital to move forward, whether it's family, friends, or even counselling. A problem shared is a problem halved. Do you agree?
I do.
So that's where DAD comes in. Now, I want people to understand, that it's really, really hard to commit that this is happening to you. So you need somewhere to turn, and if you haven't got that support network instantly, maybe we can be that support network to obviously move you forward in the process. So DAD is committed to being the network for people who need a network, who haven't got a network.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of networks.
It's a lot of networks.
But I just want people to reach out and talk. You know, you can talk to us or type to us, whichever you prefer. You can scream, you can shout, and what's the song? You can scream, you can shout, you can let it all out. I'm not going to sing that, but you know. But you know, we're here to listen and we're here to guide. So we want to be the ear that listens to, obviously, people through these times.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. I think it's there's a need to kind of break gendered stereotype norms as well, if you're particularly if you're male and at the point of divorce. There's this idea of embracing authenticity. So post-separation, the pressure to conform to traditional masculinities, so what's sometimes called hegemonic masculinities, can stifle a man's authenticity. And breaking gender stereotypes allows us as people to embrace our true selves. It gives us that freedom from the constraints of social expectations. And authenticity also fosters that self-discovery and resilience, providing a foundation for genuine connections and for emotional healing. That kind of plays into what you were talking about there about having networks of support, right? If you feel like you've got a network of support, that emotional healing can at least begin to take place.
It can do. And I mean, it is hard to start with, whether or not you've got that support network. It is, like I said before, it's traumatic. And it's an experience that you don't want to go through on your own. You know, when it first happens, you want the person that you've lost. And for most people, I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. You're not going to go and talk to the person that you're losing or have just lost about how you're feeling, because it's over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a man, a woman. I think everyone just needs to talk.
Or if you're identifying any other one of the many genders.
Yes. I think, like I said, to be honest, the idea of the dad creed, this whole reason is why we came up with the dad creed, because, like I said, I mean, whether you're a man, a woman, this is something that's just on a bit of paper or on your computer. When you're feeling low, you need someone there, or you need to be uplifted. So that's where the dad creed came in. And if you haven't listened to the dad creed, it's on our website if you want to have a little look.
Yeah, and we kind of have described it as a rallying cry, but it's sort of tongue-in-cheek when we say that, really. I had a friend say to me the other day, those sound like fighting words. And I was like, well, no, not for a second. It's an outpouring of emotion and love for our children, which essentially is what every parent places as their paramount concern, that love for their child or children. And so it's an opportunity to have a sort of collective voice and get behind that cause of there's nothing more precious in our lives than those we help create. So
100% on that, Matt. You know, everything that we do moving forward needs to be for the benefit of the children. Now, whether or not you're in a dark place or you're in an okay place, it doesn't matter what your end game is. Your end game should be for the children, if you have children. And to move forward with that, you need to share your experience of how you're feeling, because if you bottle it all up, honestly, I think you'll go insane.
Yeah, so that probably leads us to a logical discussion about, well, mental health intervention and therapeutic interventions. So I know this is none too popular amongst us blokes, but I think there's definite value in perhaps sharing some of the organisations that are out there to help and support those places that have specialist skills. So how do you feel about digging into that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I think if we can help people understand what's going on, if we can share links, send them to the right pages, and, you know, just come to us if you need help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we'll have all of the links to the things we're going to talk about in this segment in our show notes. So please feel free to follow those along. So I think what we'd like to talk about at this point is a demystifying of the idea of therapy and the benefits of therapy for fathers, mothers, and everybody in between. So shall I begin?
Yeah, you go ahead. Yeah.
So there's this idea of acknowledging and processing emotions. So post-separation, people often face societal expectations to remain stoic and unemotional. And this, although I dare say it won't make me particularly popular saying this out loud, this is much more the case for men in Western societies, where there are certain ideas about how it is you should be expected to display emotion. And I'd like to be one of the voices out there that sort of conveys the fact that that's not necessarily the case. We shouldn't be afraid to be emotional as men. And therapy provides one safe space in which you can acknowledge and process your emotions without judgment. So trained therapists can assist clients in understanding and navigating their feelings, and they can help them pave a way for healthier emotional recovery.
Yeah. So breaking stigmas surrounding mental health. Now, unfortunately, there exists a stigma around men seeking therapy, perpetuating the idea that it signifies weakness. Now, it does not signify weakness, people. It really doesn't. If anything, it signifies strength. Now, engaging in therapy post-separation challenges all of these stigmas, emphasising that seeking professional support is an act of strength and self-care. It allows men to break free from societal expectations and prioritise their mental well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes breaking free of social expectations is so important in a world where toxic masculinity is a real thing. So toxic masculinity is characterised by rigid adherence to traditional male roles, and it can be perpetuated through harmful behaviours, and that those harmful behaviours often impede expressions and emotional expressions particularly. So breaking free of those stereotypes is a crucial step in combating toxic masculinity, and therapy can be a really good way of taking stock and sort of reflecting, holding a mirror up to oneself and getting a feel for what it is about yourself you like and what it is you think you need to change. So through therapy, you can be encouraged to recognise the importance of vulnerability and seek help when that's needed, and dismantle any harmful beliefs that you might have that can hinder with both your own and other people's well-being.
So therapy equips men with coping mechanisms to navigate the challenges of post-separational life, whether it's dealing with co-parenting complexities, financial adjustments, or just personal identity rediscovery. Therapy provides valuable tools for managing stress, anxiety, and many other emotional hurdles. So improving communication skills. Now, successful post-separation communication is vital, especially in co-parenting situations. Now, therapy helps men enhance their communication skills, fostering healthy dialogue and reducing conflicts. Learning effective ways to express emotions and needs contributes to the overall well-being of the individuals and their relationships.
Absolutely. And that idea of navigating identity and self-discovery really settles in with the idea that when separation happens, it often prompts a period of self-discovery and identity re-evaluation. So I know that one of the things that we found with you after your separation was that you almost seemed completely lost for 3 months.
Yeah.
Just a shell of the person you had used to be. And so I suppose your networks of support, which were essentially your family, and incidentally, none of us are trained therapists, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
But you were able to at least offload and have some sort of conversations and invest some time in finding yourself through things like this little course. But to those of you who are out there and thinking of therapy, well, therapy can help you enhance your communication skills. It can also help you to understand your own learning journey, your own values, your goals, your aspirations. And it provides a space for introspection, so that internal monologue, that looking at yourself and seeing where things went well and where they might need to be improved. And this can help individuals redefine their sense of self beyond the constraints of the relationship you once belonged to. So shall we tell the lovely listeners about some of the external support services that are available to them?
Yeah, I think that would be beneficial to most people out there. So, recognising the importance of therapy for men post-separation, several external sources offer valuable insights and services. So we have BetterHelp, which you'll find the link to that website on our show notes. So BetterHelp provides convenient and confidential online counselling services, connecting individuals with licensed therapists who specialise in addressing the unique challenges faced by men and women post-separation.
Indeed, and BetterHelp is a growing organisation. It began life in the US, but I'm seeing it advertised on every other advert on YouTube nowadays, so it seems to be really taking off here in the UK as well. And one of the great things with BetterHelp is you get to use it at the point of need, so it's web-enabled, so you can kind of have contact with a therapist effectively at times that are convenient to you. So if you're a night shift worker, for example, you may work to a particular schedule, and you can still access that kind of therapy there too.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant way of putting it, that, Matt. Also, you have Psychology Today. Again, you'll find the link for this on our show notes. So Psychology Today offers a comprehensive directory of therapists, making it easier for men and women to find a professional who aligns with their specific needs and preferences.
Indeed, and Psychology Today, again, has been around a long time. It's mainly an American-based organisation for any of our listeners over the pond there. Like, we're big enough to have listeners over the pond.
Well, we have gone from 5 to 6 followers. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I did notice that, and I also noticed that we're getting several downloads. We're in the hundreds of the downloads now on the pod.
Well, that's what we want. We want to make a difference.
Absolutely. So, folks, before we carry on with that, this little endeavour looking at therapy, remember to share.
And like.
There's also Good Therapy, which is available at goodtherapy.org. And Good Therapy offers a therapist directory and educational resources, which helps individuals make informed choices about their mental health and their well-being.
There is also Talkspace. Talkspace offers convenient online therapy options, making mental health support accessible and flexible for men and women. Yes, folks, for men and women post-separation.
Indeed they do. And so that's our plug for a range of different therapists. None of these organisations are sponsoring us, but we just wanted to put out there that there are organisations there that you can access.
Yes.
Now, an aspect of therapy, and the lovely old adage I enjoy rolling out, is the healthy body, healthy mind trope. So what can you tell listener land about this, Lee?
Basically, I think healthy body, healthy mind, you need to look after yourself. Yeah. First thing and foremost, because if you do not look after yourself, you're going to end up just falling apart, Matt. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is where we're talking about support networks. Now, we've just spoken about therapy to you guys. And, you know, by all means, please click on the links whenever you finish listening to the podcast and have a look. But I think for me, Matt, personally, I went through therapy. Therapy wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. For me, my support network was family. And it's surprising that realising that I wasn't speaking to my family at that time, it's made me realise that family is the most important thing. So whether or not you're doing it for yourself, for anybody else, the main thing to do, I think, just move forward and make sure you have someone. And like I said, guys, if you haven't got anybody straight away, please come to the website. Please hit us up with a message. We will respond to you.
Absolutely, we will. We're keen to have contact with as many or as few people as want to reach out. And this includes everybody, by the way. This is people who believe in what it is we're trying to do here. And those of you who don't, we are a community that's filled with love, compassion, and we observe the golden rule. So feel free to reach out to us, everybody. We're happy to have conversations and meaningful dialogue with you all.
Yeah. Also, I think we need to start exploring hobbies and interests for people, especially with post-separation. It can encourage one's personal growth. So what can you tell us about this, Matt?
Yeah, nice one. So exploring hobbies and interests post-divorce can offer a multitude of benefits. It can contribute to emotional healing. It can give personal growth and the establishment of a fulfilling and independent lifestyle. So here are some key advantages associated with hobbying.
So stress reduction. Hobbies can be a powerful stress relief mechanism. See, I've said it this time with no mistakes. Thank you, guys. The applause is necessary.
I better do it. Hey!
So, post-divorce individuals often face heightened stress levels, and participating in enjoyable activities helps reduce tension and promote relaxation. Whether it's reading, gardening, painting, or immersive nature of hobbies can create a sense of peace and calm.
Absolutely, and emotional healing can occur as a result of this. So engaging in hobbies provides a healthy outlet for processing emotions. And there are lots of them associated with divorce. So it offers a constructive way to channel feelings of grief, sadness, or anger. And facilitating emotional healing is such an important part of this learning journey. Would you agree, Lee?
100%, Matt. And I think, you know, when it comes to obviously learning hobbies or skills or just keeping your mind occupied, keeping busy, you know, it can be very, very daunting at first. You know, you're coming out of your comfort zone to do something you wouldn't normally do. But if you don't do that, your brain is just going to, you know, explode with thoughts and overthinking, and something has to give.
Absolutely. And I think what's worth mentioning here is that whilst we hope dad becomes something that can help lots and lots of people out there, this whole process of podcasting and setting up blogs and writing for those has been something of a hobby for both of us.
This has been a hobby for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you've experienced this hobby as well, and I think you kind of like it personally.
I don't enjoy the seeing you upset.
Yeah.
Or seeing, you know, what's happening to your family, but I definitely enjoy trying to be a force for good.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice in that regard that we can facilitate that.
So to find a strength in somebody to lean on, you know, is a brilliant thing to do.
Absolutely.
You know, like I said, family for me personally, that's what's got me through difficult times. And like I said, therapy wasn't for me because I found it to be very long-waited, should I say. You know, you'd be waiting months and months and months to even get on a waiting list. You would have a phone call. They would speak to you for 5-10 minutes just to get a brief outline of things and then decide whether or not you need therapy. It was just a very, very long-winded process. Now, I remember I had a phone call, first ever therapy session, by the way, for about an hour's time. It was an hour-long call. And by the end of it, I felt like I was just telling a complete stranger who's there to just get paid at the end of the week my problems, and I didn't really benefit from that. I found personally speaking to family helped me through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to bring a slightly different perspective to that, in that for any of you out there in listener land who know me, I've had a mental breakdown at a point in my adult life, and as a consequence of that was court enforced therapy. So I was.
You sound like a naughty boy now, Matt.
Well, I'd done nothing illegal, it's fair to say, but it was about acting in my personal interest. So I was basically told that I had to undertake therapy for a fixed period of time, and it was the single best thing I'd ever done, because it was a great teaching experience. I'd learnt lots about myself that I just hadn't realised to be problematic. I was able to address those problems through therapy. So I think it's one of those things that either does or doesn't work for people, but there's a range of help out there, would be the point. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%, Matt. There is so many ways out there for people to move past this. Now, you can't do it on your own, guys, and I've said this before and I'm saying it again. Please, please, please reach out, whether or not it's to friends, family, but even to us, especially to us. We are here to listen.
Absolutely, we are. So there's also this idea of rediscovery of self-identity that comes about with taking up hobbies. And so divorce can sometimes lead to a reevaluation of your own identity. And exploring hobbies provides an opportunity for this self-discovery and rediscovery. So engaging in activities that bring personal fulfillment helps individuals reconnect with their interests, their passions and aspirations outside the context of the relationship. It can build confidence and self-esteem. So successfully pursuing hobbies post-divorce contributes to a sense of accomplishment. As individuals master new skills or develop existing ones, it boosts confidence and self-esteem. And this newfound self-assurance is beneficial for building up your resilience and embracing a positive outlook on life.
So creating a social network. So many hobbies involve social interaction, providing an avenue for building new connections and friendships. So post-divorce, expanding social circles can be crucial for emotional support and a sense of community. Group activities related to hobbies offer opportunities to meet like-minded individuals who share common interests.
And it can be really difficult to want to do hobbies or anything like that when you immediately separate. But it's something that we'd encourage here because it gets you out of your own headspace, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think when this first happened to me, Matt, I met someone and they offered me to go to a football night. It was to, you know, finish work, meet them at the sports centre and go play a round of football. And it was all to do with men's mental health, which is why they started this team. And don't get me wrong, it was all new and I said yes, but honestly, I never went. And I wish I had done now to experience something out of my comfort zone.
Absolutely. Because it gives you that physical outlet, but at the same time allows you to connect with other people who perhaps have that shared affinity. And a moment ago when I said that therapy helped me significantly, that's perhaps where it helped the most. It was realising that I wasn't the only person who had a mental illness, and being in a space with other people who were talking about it openly. And I'd love to get into some of that at some point in future pods, because I think there's some fascinating stories to be told there. Really helped. So, Lee, there are probably...
Quick one, Matt, before you carry on. Sorry to interrupt you. I don't know if you've ever saw the film Yes Man with Jim Carrey.
I have indeed.
Now, what's your opinion on that? Because let's think of it like this. So if we're all going through troubles, especially after post-separation, we're self-isolating, we don't know, one day to the next what's going on. Now, this film, I mean, I've only ever saw it once, but the meaning to it, I think just to say yes and go out, like I said, I keep mentioning comfort zone. My comfort zone has been very challenging this past year. You know, some things I've been happy to do, some things I haven't been happy to do. But if I'd have just said yes to doing something new, maybe I would have got to the end of this process quicker. You know, you never know what's out there. And like I said, you know, whether it's a yes or a no to people, find something that you enjoy.
Now, what Lee doesn't know is, because I don't often speak too openly about mental health, but what he doesn't know is that one of my therapists, Karen, as part of her treatment plan, she asked me to watch that movie. Yes, Man.
Really?
Yeah, and she said, what I want you to do is I want you to go out this week and say yes to twice as many things as you say no to.
Okay.
And it was a really fascinating thing to do because it meant that you, as you've just said, you were going outside of that comfort zone. You were sort of trying new things, and you know, it was challenging and uncomfortable. But these things are, therapy is an uncomfortable process, but by its nature, but it does help you to grow and achieve that personal growth.
I think when it first starts, I think your anxiety is through the roof because you're doing something you wouldn't normally do.
Absolutely.
Like going to the gym, should we say?
Yeah, well, I went to the gym once.
Whee!
I mean, literally once. Some of the noises.
I thought you'd been working out, Matt. Or was this?
This was a long, long time ago, and I decided never to go again.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, it was mainly the noises coming out of the mouths of our lot that put me off. To be fair, just not a comfortable space at all. There's a couple of other subjects that we have to talk about. But what we're probably going to do is we're going to talk on one more of them today, and we'll sort of make this a bit of a two-part thing and do some more around this idea of self-care in the next pod, if that's all right with you, Lee.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think one of the things then we should talk about is we've spoken about hobbies, so there's probably value in talking about why it's necessary to set healthy boundaries post-separation. There's probably seven or eight key benefits to this, but we can go through some of these just now if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd love to. Excellent. So I think emotional well-being. So one of the primary reasons for establishing there we go, folks, I've got it right this time. So establishing I'm so sorry.
I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's get up to that word, then you stop and I'll
now you see I'm coming out of my comfort zone by saying words I wouldn't normally say.
Oh well, let's give it a go. Let's go up to that word and I'll
let's start that again, shall we? So one of the primary reasons for
establishing
you very much healthy boundaries post-separation is to safeguard emotional well-being. The end of a relationship can be emotionally challenging, and clear boundaries provide a protective framework, helping individuals create space for healing and preventing unnecessary emotional distress. Setting limits on communication and interactions can contribute to a healthier emotional state, clarity in communication. Healthy boundaries contribute to clarity in post-separation dynamics. They establish clear guidelines for communication, ensuring that both parties understand their roles, responsibilities, and expectations. This clarity minimizes misunderstandings, reduces the potential for conflicts, and fosters a more cooperative and amicable environment.
Absolutely. And that idea of clarity within communication, there's a number of parenting apps that are available and are used throughout the court system with parents that are going through divorce and separation and things like that. And we'll dedicate a future episode to that. We're actually hoping that Dad can become part of that whole process of providing those kinds of services too, but we'll tell you more on that in the future. So there's also the need to set these boundaries for personal growth and autonomy. So post-separation, individuals often need the space to rediscover themselves and to pursue personal growth. Healthy boundaries enables each person to reclaim that sense of autonomy and independence. And this involves setting limits on interference in personal lives, allowing individuals to explore their interests, establishing new routines, and essentially focusing on their own well-being.
For couples who share children, setting healthy boundaries is particularly crucial for co-parenting success. Clear guidelines on parenting responsibilities, decision making, and communication help create a stable and secure environment for the children. Consistent boundaries also reduce the likelihood of conflicts and contribute to a more harmonious co-parenting relationship, preventing unnecessary conflict. So without clear boundaries, post-separation interactions can become breeding grounds for conflict. Healthy boundaries act as a preventive measures, outlining acceptable behaviour and communication methods. This reduces the potential for misunderstandings, disputes, and unnecessary emotional strain, promoting a more peaceful and constructive separation process.
Yeah, and we appreciate that can be really difficult, especially at the start of a separation where those boundaries are pretty much blurred. One of the things I think we can both say with some confidence is it gets better over time, and those sort of more cordial relationships are likely to emerge the longer that separation is evident.
Yeah.
I think it's a time cures all ills thing, essentially. It's a long game.
It is a long game.
So protecting personal space then. Establishing healthy boundaries is essential for protecting personal space and privacy. This includes setting limits on intrusive questions, monitoring social media interactions, and defining boundaries around personal space and belongings. Respecting personal space post-separation is vital for creating a sense of security and for building trust.
Encouraging self-care. So post-separation individuals must prioritise self-care as they navigate the emotional challenges of a breakup. Healthy boundaries allow individuals to establish dedicated time for self-care activities such as therapy, exercise, and hobbies. Prioritising self-care contributes to emotional resilience, aiding in the overall healing process.
Absolutely. And so creating a foundation for future relationships, setting healthy boundaries after a separation lays the foundations for future relationships. It lets you establish and respect boundaries in a valuable way, and doing so has positive outcomes for, above all else, children. And this is something that we at Dad are most significantly invested in. It can be really easy to forget about the need for these boundaries and being proactive in promoting them. But it's essential you do, because your children benefit from that.
Yeah, and like we said, it's all about the children. Moving forward, do what's best for you. Now, when it comes to setting boundaries, whether or not you decide to do it within a week or a year, it depends on the individual.
And the circumstances, right?
And the circumstances. If it's just a normal post-separation where you're both amicable, and you both decide to go your separate ways, there should be some sort of co-parenting guideline there.
Straight away.
But obviously, if you're going through a significantly different type of post-separation.
Such as contested separations,
Contested separations. I think guidelines will come over time.
Indeed, absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So anything else you want to bring up just now, Lee? No, okay, cool.
No, good, Matt.
Well, what we've got, folks, is we've got pages and pages of notes in front of us just now. So there's a whole range of stuff we'd like to have spoken about in this episode, including financial difficulties and financial management, the need to become financially liberated as time goes by. We've also got notes relating to how you can champion healthy relationships and how you can essentially break stigma around masculine mental health. We'll get into those topics in future episodes because we can see right now we're running long on this one. So
I think that's from me messing up all these words, Matt. I do apologise.
I quite like it when you do, mate. It gives us something to laugh and joke about on an otherwise very serious topic.
Yeah, so I think let's close this out in the usual way, Matt. Come on, let's have the awful dad joke.
All right. I'm going to keep all of these PG for now, but depending on where the audience goes, they might get a little ruder as time goes by. So here's the dad joke for the day. Dear Math, grow up and solve your own problems. And now, my G, over to you for your thought for the day.
So my thought for the day today is focus on the good and the good gets better. It's as simple as that, Matt.
When you focus on the good gets better.
And I'm not going to sing because I can't.
And neither can I, and yet I've publicly and
it was better than me, put it that way.
Humiliated myself for another week. I don't mind. I teach for a living. I'm used to humiliating myself. Okay, so let's end in the usual way with the dad's creed. Come on, people. If you know it, join along. We look forward to seeing you next week. We'll have the episode with Sarah on as soon as we can. We're working tirelessly to make sure that's edited and ready for your consumption. And remember, as always, follow us on socials.
Like and share.
And subscribe to our podcast. We very much look forward to speaking with you in the shed at this time next week.
Take care and have an excellent week. In those moments when you feel downcast, when the hope is sucked from your lungs and your gaze is cast to the floor in despair, raise your head up high, and with the thought of the most precious thing in your life, your children, held firmly in your heart, say the DAD creed with me. I believe in nothing more than the love I have for you, not hell nor high water, not rain nor shine, not hate nor despair, or those who would keep us apart with no true cause to do so, will change this love. A father's love is like no other, imparted on his soul from the moment he first saw the apple of his eye. The rights of fathers and those of their children are not a privilege, they are a right. A right we will exercise with compassion, care, love and observance of the golden rule. Raise your hands confidently, caringly and with hope. Be counted because not all dads are deadbeats.
And so, if you're interested in having riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency, look out for DAD on the interwebs and social media. We look forward to seeing you and welcoming you to our conversations.